You know, it seems so long ago that we checked in with the legendary music group Lone Star, so I felt, you know, it's time to do it again. Dean Sams is joining us on the line. Hi, Dean.
Hey, good to talk to you. And legendary, that sounds big.
Well,
sounds impressive.
Well, here's the deal, though. You guys have been in the music industry, I know, since at least the early 90s, right?
I put the band together in 92, so yeah, we've been around. We're celebrating 27 years right now.
And I know you guys were on the show, one of your brothers, that's what he called you guys, brothers. Richie called in. It was July 27th, 2012. You guys were celebrating 20 years. So let me ask you then, what's the secret to that longevity? We don't see that in the music industry that much these days.
You know, there's a lot of things I could attribute it to, but I think primarily just a common love of music, the same music that we create, that we all have in common. I think there's a lot of mutual respect that we have for everybody's talents that they bring to the band, and quite honestly, the fans. I mean, the fans, they show up to these shows, and we watch them singing every word. And they're just excited to see us. And how can you, not be excited about walking out on stage and performing and staying together as a unit when you have so much support? And that's really what keeps us motivated.
Yeah, I mean, the fans thing is huge, but also it's got to be your love of music, because if you didn't love it, you wouldn't be doing it. And I know that, and a lot of artists these days just want to be the talent, right? They just want to be the voice. But I know that you produced, it was an entire album, wasn't it?
Actually, I've done our last three records.
Yeah.
I've produced those. So it's, which is truly such a huge honor that the band trusted me enough to do that. I've been producing music pretty much ever since I've been in Nashville, so I've been doing it a long time. But when you're working with your bandmates, and we've had some heavy hitters as producers in our career. I mean, from Dan Huff, who produced really our biggest records, to Don Cook, who's worked with everybody from Us to Brooks and Dunn, and I mean, just the list that he's worked with goes on and on. And we worked with Justin Niebank and Mark Bright, and I mean, just a bunch of great producers. So just the fact that the guys entrusted me with our sound and producing three records was really exciting for me. But I think the albums turned out great, and it was a blast to work with everybody.
Is it a natural progression over time then to have your sound as a group change? Because, there's a little bit of a different sound in the 90s, and is that just the group growing up, or why do those changes sort of happen?
Well, it's I think it's just a progression in music. I mean, we all, I think as musicians, have gotten, I think we've gotten better over the years. I think we've gotten more comfortable with who we are and what we do and what we want to say and what we want to sound like. And in the early days, you have a lot of people with their hands in the cookie jar, so to speak, trying to shape and mold us, which we all truly respect everybody that's been part of our career, and we've got a lot of great advice over the years. And but at the end of the day, you finally reach a certain point where you want to stretch your wings a little bit and try different things. I mean, we made a huge transition from the second album, which was Crazy Nights, and going from that to the Lonely Grill album, which had four number ones on it, with Amazed, What About Now, Smile, and Tell Her. That was, if you listen from Crazy Nights to Lonely Grill, I mean, it was a pretty big change. And and we were kind of leading the format with the change. And I remember there was a lot of, I was told that Murder on Music Row was written about us. I don't know if that's true or not, but okay. I had heard that, there was a song called Murder on Music Row.
Yeah.
And talking about, because we had the crossover success with Amazed. It was a 2-week number one on the pop charts. And of course, it was a 9-week number one on the country chart. And, it was different for the format at the time. And I feel like that's really what music is supposed to do, though. It's supposed to evolve and move and flow with what's going on and the trends and what each act is feeling musically. And, when I listen to country radio today, I mean, it's truly a lot different than what we were doing, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And I'm okay with that because, you know what, that tells us that there's, I think it brings new fans to the format, fans that might not be country music enthusiasts before now are, and then they get to go back and I've met so many people at our shows that, you know, said, I really had never listened to Lone Star, but I'm a Thomas Rhett fan, and I was scrolling through one of his, or a Brett Young fan or something like that, and I know that they've mentioned y'all and they're in talking about, you know, artists that they like, and so I listen to y'all and wow, I love your music. So I think it, you know, it just helps build the format, and it helps all of us in the long run.
Really, what's changed though in that time is the recording industry itself and the way you record music. What has been the biggest change or the biggest difference from that first album that you guys recorded?
Wow. Well, the first album, actually, I had a friend of mine in the car. We were driving kind of close to Music Row last week, and as we were driving by, I said, wow. I said, and he goes, what? And I said, look right over here. And there was a brand new high-rise condo. Beautiful, but there was this high-rise condo, and I said, right here where this condo is, there used to be a great recording studio that we recorded our first two albums. And you know, back in those days, we were using 2-inch tape, right. Recording to tape. It wasn't digital recording like, you know, most people record into Pro Tools or some form of that, you know, digital recording. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back then, you know, you had to put it down on tape right the first time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had to get your takes right. And because if you did what we call punching in, like if you messed up on something and you punched in, I mean, you couldn't go back if the engineer messed up and didn't come in at the right time, or if you played the wrong thing. I mean, you could mess up a whole take. So, I mean, you know, things were a lot more precise from the initial playing side of it. Nowadays, I mean, gosh, with digital format, you can take as many swings at a part as you want and really get it technically perfect, which is great in one sense. But in another sense, you know, you kind of lose a little bit of that. Sometimes there's beauty in imperfection, and especially with music. If you go back and listen to some of the biggest records of all time, like, you know, the Beatles and stuff like that, I mean, you know, everything wasn't perfectly in tune, and sometimes they sped up a song or slowed down a song, and that's some of the beauty of that music. And you know, nowadays, you know, we have click tracks, and we can beat detective and get everything perfect. And sometimes you can almost through perfection, you can make things sterile and not feel emotional. And I think that's really the challenge with music these days, is to keep the emotion in the music through the midst of recording in a more perfect environment.
If you could put a timestamp on it, like if you were to tell me back in the day how long it would take to record one song from start to finish compared to now, what would be that time difference, would you estimate?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, I think we used to spend, you know, I mean, time-wise, I mean, we would get a basic track done, and, you know, we would come in, we'd rehearse, we'd do pre-production and whatever before we would ever go in the studio, so we would know the arrangement, and we'd all kind of practiced our parts, and then we'd go in, and typically we would knock it out, at least the basic track, we would knock it out in a couple, two or three takes, and then you can add on an extra guitar part or an extra piano part, and then, of course, you would do the vocal and background vocals and build it that way. And so it might take you a week to get your fully mixed song, but the recording of it would be pretty, you know, quick. Nowadays, I mean, you know, a lot of people, gosh, I mean, they're not even playing drums live anymore. It's drum loops, and, you know, and they build a track, you know, over the course of time and make change, you know. You can make it as fast as you want, or because there's so many different instruments and different plugins and different sounds available to us and different ways to record. I mean, sometimes you can just overdo it and spend, you know, weeks and weeks, you know, trying to perfect something. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier. I mean, just because something is perfect doesn't mean that it's emotional and it will grab people. So
right.
I think, you know, there are certain artists that really strive for the emotional part of recording, and other people go more for the perfection part of recording. And there are some artists that I think really have the best of both. Like I love Keith Urban's stuff. I mean, I think he's so technically perfect in his singing and his playing, but it touches you. Every word he sings, every guitar lick he plays, it feels emotional. And so, you know, there are certain artists that are still doing both very well.
Well, it almost seems like in the recording studio there's more computer screens than people or emotions.
There can be. And you know, I think that's probably our greatest challenge outside of just figuring out how to monetize music these days, because, you know, through all the streaming services, it's
right.
Getting harder and harder for songwriters, publishers, artists in general to make money, which is, you know, is how we pay our bills. We put our, you know, take care of our families and
right.
Stuff. It's, you know, getting harder and harder to, you know, make any money doing it. But outside of that great challenge, I think our next greatest challenge is finding ways to keep the emotion and the heart in the music. And I know it's something us as a band, through our last recordings, I mean, we've always focused on the heart of the song, the storyline. I mean, you can mm-hmm. have the greatest sounding drums, bass, guitar, piano, whatever. But if the message of the song and if the performance is technically perfect but doesn't have the heart in it, I don't think it translates as well to the fans. And I think we as a band have always, us and the guys in Lone Star, have always focused on the emotional part of the songs, whether it's up-tempo. I mean, you can put a lot of great emotion in an up-tempo song. And the same thing with a ballad. I mean, I don't think there's somebody that delivers a ballad better than Richie does, in my estimation. I mean, he's a great connector of emotional content when he sings, and I love that about his vocal.
Let me ask you then, it sort of ties into everything that we've been talking about in terms of how the industry has changed and how recording has changed, and now, as you mentioned, you know, people are making music so quickly, and it's for the sake of a quick buck. Now, does that... And I don't even know what the right word is. Does that worry you? Does that concern you about the state of music? Like, where do you see this headed?
Well, like I said, my biggest concern about music is the fact that, you know, some of our best songwriters, I mean, people that actually craft the songs, you know, they're leaving the industry because they can't make a living at it. I mean, you have people that are having, you know, getting songs that have over 500,000. Over 500 million plays,
yeah.
You know, through a provider, a streaming provider, and, you know, and the payout's less than $30,000. And that $30,000 gets divided up between however many writers there are, how many publishers there are, the record label, and the artist. So, you know, $30,000 doesn't go a long ways when you're dividing the money that way. And so it's you know, some of our best songwriters, people that truly have a gift. I mean, that's what they were put on this earth to do. They're having to go do other things because they literally can't take care of their families because the streaming services pay so little per play. And I know for the fans, you know, musically, they're thinking, well, this is great. I pay a small fee, or sometimes they don't even pay anything for these streaming services, and they think it's great. I get to hear any song I want, anytime I want. I don't have to pay anything. But what's happening is, though, I think our songs are starting to suffer. We're not getting the great. I mean, when I think about my years growing up, some of the best songs were out there. I mean, that really said something and melodically took me to a place. I mean, I can hear them to this day, and it takes me back to a time and a place. And I worry that with a lot of the music that's coming out these days, where, you know, I think they're going to be forgotten about too soon, because there's not as much. And of course, I'm generalizing. There are still
right.
a bunch of great songs
sure.
out there and great artists. But I'm just thinking overall, that's a big concern that I have.
Well, the good thing for Lone Star is there's really good money in touring, and you guys have a whole bunch of dates. See, you like how I spin that? You guys are well.
You're good.
And you guys have
the touring, the touring is truly been amazing. I mean, it's always been what we love the most. I mean, we love recording, we love creating, but it's that live interaction with the fans that's always driven us. And I tell you what, our fans have been coming out supporting us. I mean, show after show, they find us. I mean, we had so many fans last year that we saw. We there's this one. I mean, and there's lots of them that I could name, but this one husband wife, they followed us. I think they came to 18 shows last year, which is a lot. But the fact that they flew to Hawaii and watched us in Hawaii, and they were in California, and they were in Florida, and they were, I mean, they went all over to watch us perform last year. And the fact that fans will that care enough about our music and our show, and they're impressed enough by it to spend that time and energy to come to the shows, makes it really a powerful time for us, that 90 minutes we get on stage.
Absolutely. My colleague is holding something that says July 27th. What? Oh, you're in my hometown on July 27th. Okay. All right. You're in Winnipeg. You're Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'll see what I can do. Maybe I will fly in for that. Okay, Dean?
I tell you, that would be awesome. And I can tell you this. We are in the midst of putting together a brand new show. Actually, May 31st, we're going to be in Dayton, Ohio, and that's going to be the first of our new show. And okay. We're so excited. We've been working on this thing for about 6 weeks now, and we're incorporating some production elements that we haven't had in some time as a band is really going to ramp up our stage production a lot and give the fans something they haven't seen from us in a long time. Actually, one of the elements, I'm not even going to talk about it, but I mean, it's we've never done it as a band, and I think the fans that come out to the shows, outside of just hearing a lot of great music, they're going to get some other things that really elevates the energy of the show and just makes it for a total all-around better experience. And but of course, they're going to get to hear all the hits. We're calling it Hits and More Hits is the name of the tour. And that's what the fans are going to get, literally, hits and more hits.
But we're not getting any spoilers from Dean, it sounds like. That's too bad. Oh.
Well, I mean, you're getting some. I mean, it's. I can tell you this. I'll just go ahead and tell you, we've added some LED screen components and some other things. I won't go into all of it, but we're adding some really cool video content and LED screens, which we've never had as a band. And and some of the content is going to take people back in time. It's really fun to look back at some of the things we're adding to the screens that people are going to go, oh my God, I remember that. And so it's going to be fun.
It's like one big throwback Thursday, it sounds like.
It's a throwback Thursday. I'll tell you, things are so exciting around here. I mean, you can probably hear the train in the background. There's a train going by just pumping its whistle. It's excited. It's giving us its vote of confidence, too.
Absolutely. Okay, so all of the information about your tour dates and music and everything is on your website, right?
It is, LoneStarNow.com, and then they can also check us out, and we hope they do on, they can go to our Facebook page. They can find out all the dates. We also have an Instagram and a Twitter, so we love for all the fans to reach out to us. But it can all start if they go to LoneStarNow.com. There's actually links to all of those different websites and Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. They can connect with us. And we're very active on it. So if they reach out and write in, they could very possibly get a response from us because we're all four of us very active reaching out to our fans and talking to them.
I'm going to test that. I'm going to tweet you guys in a few minutes, okay?
All right. And I'll be honest, I'm the least on Twitter. I'm more on Instagram and Facebook, but I'll check out some Twitter, too, if that's where you go.
All right, that's what I'll do. All right, well, Dean Sams from Lone Star, thanks for joining us, and maybe I'll see you in July then.
I look forward to seeing you then, and thanks for your time.